Section D will come to order. Secretary, call the roll.
Ready. Chair Mercer.
Here.
Vice Chair Howard.
Here.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Here.
Senator Lynch.
Here.
Representative Nabe. Senator Osmundson.
Here.
Representative Patelis.
Here.
All right, good morning. Good morning, Ms. Lundowski, Ms. Hultin. Ms. Lundowski, I wonder if you can share your screen with the chart you did on pay adjustments. I've got a couple of clarifications that I'm hoping that either you or Ms. Hultin can answer.
Sure, Chair Mercer, I will go ahead and share my screen.
All right, thank you very much. So I'm going to ask this question of you, Ms. Lewandowski, but feel free if this is more of an OBPP question. Starting with the, let's go to the Office of Public Defender category on page 2 of the chart. And the bottom line of that chart discusses something called a training assignment progression. And if I'm interpreting it right, there were 21 people within the agency that got a training assignment progression at a total cost of $184,000, $184,461 over the two-year period, fiscal year 19 and fiscal year 20. So A, am I reading that correctly? And B, what is a training assignment progression?
Chair Mercer, members of the committee, I might defer that to Ms. Hultin, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Ms. Hultin.
Mr. Chair, that is, they've hired law students who haven't had the bar yet, and then as they pass the bar, then they get a pay increase. That's what that training assignment progression is.
Okay, thank you for that, Ms. Hultin. I want to ask a follow-up. So do you... It surprises me that that the defender would be hiring lawyers who are not licensed members of the bar. Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's kind of their way of trying to keep hiring so that they've kind of ask them to come in, and I'm sure they're not doing cases at that time, but that's what the agency kind of does that, and kind of helps out. I think they hire quite a few of them from U of M, and then they, as they pass the bar, then they get to go into lawyer one, or attorney one, I think it is.
Okay, so do you think they had 21 lawyers in the course of the two fiscal years that were hired without being members of the bar that then got an adjustment? It seems kind of counterintuitive to me that you'd be paying, you couldn't hire someone, I wouldn't think, as an attorney unless they were a member of the bar. But it also seems odd.
There's an increase there.
I'm sorry?
Mr. Chair, I think that's why you're seeing the increases. They're not hired as an attorney. They're probably hired as an, I don't know what the title is, but assistant or something. And then as they get, they pass the bar, then they get to get promoted to attorney one.
Okay. Ms. Lundowski, if you can ask Ms. Lindquist about that, I'd like to understand how that works. And I'm wondering if it isn't more when there are people that are not members of the Montana bar, but a member of another bar that they hire, and then in time those people become members that can appear in state court. But I'd like to get some clarity on that. Let's go to another area of that same thing, reclassification. There were 71 reclassifications at a cost of $276,475 in fiscal year 19 and 20. Help us understand what that means.
That, Mr. Chairman, that is the pay plan that was approved last time.
Senator Osmundson.
Ms. Holteen, shouldn't that be under expected changes? I mean, we're talking about management decisions here, I believe.
And why would only 71 people get it?
The reclassification was part of the DOA and doing the pay plan.
So, Ms. Holteen, that would not fit under the expected changes under statewide present law. You're saying that they would have had to make that management decision even though it was an expected change in the pay plan?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Osmundson, you were cutting up.
I'm sorry.
The whole question.
Yeah, so let me just restate it. So I guess what I'm understanding you to say is that when we gave them the pay plan, that automatically put them into a different classification, and that's why it wasn't in the expected changes, it was under a management decision? Or was it the fact that someone in the agency made a management decision? Because, I mean, we're just talking about management decisions here, not the expected changes. So this is just a piece of statewide present law, not the entirety of it.
That is correct. I think I understand what you're saying. When the screens get shared, I'm kind of gobbled.
Oh, okay. No, I guess what we're trying to get at, Ms. Holteen, is just I would have assumed that the pay plan, anything we would have done last time, would have fallen under the expected changes in the statewide present law. Reclassifications would be more of a management decision inside the agency outside of the pay plan. Is that correct?
My understanding was it had to do, and I don't know if the pay plan, I was told that was the pay plan, but I can double check. Which kind of makes sense, but now that you mention it that way, I believe that's the pay plan, but I can double check on that.
Okay. I'm just going to follow up while I've got the mic on. Ms. Holteen, we talked about yesterday the negotiated pay scale. I know you were going to look into some of that. Did you find anything out?
The negotiated pay scale was that DP that you approved last time for, it's negotiated with the unions, and that is the career ladder that we had last time.
So, Ms. Holteen, my understanding was when I look through, say, for example, and I do remember we gave OPD, you know, some flexibility there, but I see it in corrections. I see it in a lot of different agencies. And so I don't know if it was necessarily just the money we gave OPD, because I see it in Department of Justice, Judicial Branch,
but
not so much. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Osmundson, they also have negotiations with unions, so that's what that is.
Okay, so I guess that kind of is my question. It's not necessarily money that we necessarily gave them in particular to negotiate pay scales. It's something that they have the authority to do when we're out of town, is to renegotiate their pay.
Correct, and they could this time because you gave them money to increase their pay ladder, which has also been a finding in their audit. But correctional officers are also negotiated. I mean, a few of those do have unions that they negotiate pay scales with. And OPD does negotiate with their union for that. So that's, I think, why it says negotiated pay scale. But that is the money that you gave them to increase their pay ladder.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it makes sense in OPD. I just did not realize that we had given that authority. The other agencies had that same authority to renegotiate their pay outside of the pay plan, but that's my misunderstanding then.
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, some of that is in statutory.
That's what I would assume, is they have some statutory authority to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank
you. Further questions from the committee?
I just have one question.
Senator Howard.
Marcy, this question, Chairman Marcy, I just had asked you for some information on driver's licenses. I was wondering if whenever you get that, you could provide it to me.
Chair Mercer, Vice Chair Howard, I have requested that information from the agency, and I can send that along once I receive it. I'll follow up with them today.
Okay, because they've been contacting me independently, and I was kind of wondering what your figures were versus theirs.
Chair Mercer, Vice Chair Howard, I can look into that further as well.
Okay, thank you very much.
Further questions in the committee? I've got one more. This now is for the FTE chart, and thank you very much, Ms. Lewandowski, for putting the FTE chart together for us. I guess it's actually called the vacancy report. Just want to go over a couple of these lines, and I'd like either you or Ms. Hultin, to the extent that you've got any reaction to this question, there's sort of a what appears to be sort of a surprising number of vacancies in certain lines. So if we compare the December 5th, 2019 to the current vacancy report, we had 16 vacancies in the Highway Patrol. That's now up to 23. And I'm going to ask essentially the same question for all of these that I'm going to mention. So if either one of you have reactions, great. Has that been variable over that 2 year, I guess it's more like a 15-month period? We've got that large vacancy number in the Highway Patrol. We've got pretty much the static vacancy number in the Motor Vehicle Division, 8 vacancies at the initial point of the period, and now 9. And then when we get over to corrections, we've got 8 vacancies in probation and parole back in December of 19. That's jumped to 9.5. And in the secured facilities divisions, we were at 66, and we're down now to 36.5, but still a really large number of vacant positions. So in your experience, and I guess clinical services, I think we heard about that they've had trouble recruiting and retaining. They were at 15, now they're down to 11. So I guess I'm interested in whether this is sort of an ongoing condition that didn't it just exist in this 15-month period, but in fact is something that you've observed over time. Maybe it's a little bit different here and there, but you've got these significant number of vacancies that are persistent and don't ever seem to change. So is that how you'd react to these data, or do they bounce around more than the chart reflects?
Chair Mercer, members of the committee, I would have to look into that further for more variability. I can say that I did provide another document that shows the position descriptions for those vacancies, so the committee can kind of review that and see what where the vacancies were and what positions over those two vacancy reports. But as far as variability, I would have to look into that further to provide the committee kind of more information on that.
All right. And the chart that you've got projected, when did you circulate that, or is that only available in Teams? I've not printed that one.
Chair Mercer, members of the committee, I just posted this, I believe, yesterday afternoon.
Okay.
I believe I emailed it to you, but I will double check and send it out again to make sure everyone has a copy of that.
Let me ask Kristen, is it possible for you to get hard copies of this for all the members of the committee?
For right now?
Within the next 15 minutes.
I can have
okay. All right. Further questions for either Ms. Hultin or Ms. Lewandowski?
Marcy, can you send me the exact things that he wants printed off, and I'll have them printed upstairs?
I can do that.
Thank you.
Further questions?
And then Marcy, can you send it to me as well?
All right. Further questions from the committee? All right. Seeing none, we're adjourned. Reconvene tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock for executive action as posted. Thank you.